All right, before we kick off the show here, I want to throw out a little request. Please like, follow, and share or subscribe to this podcast. Sharing is caring, and that lets us know that you like the podcast and that the show is providing value. Share this with any friends, relatives, or anything like that that owns land or are interested in land. And be sure to like and follow this podcast, subscribe to it, because that's also how we gauge success with this podcast. So let's get on with the show here. Welcome to episode number 85 for the National Land Realty Podcast, where we discuss all things land. Our goal here is to inform, educate, and entertain those of you who own land or are interested in the buying and selling of land throughout the United States. Yes, for those of you wondering, I say that at the beginning of every episode, and I record a new one every time because it matters. I put that effort in. All right, my name is Matt Christian, and I'm the Chief Marketing Officer here at National Land Realty. I will be your host for this episode. Today, we're talking about commercial real estate. If you've been following the news throughout 2023 and on into 2024, or if you work in commercial real estate, you already know this, but commercial real estate has been a huge story if you're following the media. Commercial real estate has been called everything from a disaster waiting to happen to a fairly strong market. If you've been following this story, that could be fairly confusing. Now, we want to help clear some of this up. Today, we're talking to Corey Bowes. Corey Bowes is the Director of Commercial for National Land Realty, and that gives him a particular insight to the commercial real estate industry throughout the United States because his team is all throughout the United States. He gets a direct pulse on the commercial real estate sector and what's going on in 2023-2024. Corey is here today to discuss what he sees in the market throughout 2024. Corey's rarely ever wrong. So he's here to talk about his insights. This is worthwhile, especially for those of you who own land that are on the outskirts of city limits or already within city limits. This episode in particular really matters to you. But for everybody else, it matters to you too, because it's just fascinating information. So stay tuned, sit back, and enjoy. Okay, so I am sitting here with an old friend. We got Corey Bowes, the Director of Commercial for National Land Realty. And we're here to talk about sort of the 2024 outlook of commercial real estate, what it looks like. And this matters for landowners because a lot of landowners out there may have land that is prime for converting into commercial use. And that's where this really matters in the conversation, is talking about where the market is headed. So Corey, you know, for those that have missed past up, because you've been out here like what, two, three times now?
Yeah, I think so. Returning guest.
Yeah. So just a refresher, you know, tell us a bit about your role at National Land and sort of how you got into that role.
Yeah. So I'm down in Raleigh, North Carolina, and we are a growing metro area, Raleigh-Durham Research Triangle Park. And 5 to 7 years ago, we really got into linking up with acquisition managers of single family development builders and going out and helping them putting projects together. That was a little different from what we had traditionally done as a company. And so that has now snowballed into a much more robust commercial division where we've got 34 agents placed around the company in all different large major MSAs. And everybody's doing a little bit something different. We may specialize, or that broker may specialize in single family residential development. Some we've got a lot on the multifamily side. And then our South Carolina groups are really heavy in industrial. So it really depends on where you are in the United States as to what product is moving the quickest and where the most demand is. And we've tried to place brokers in those marketplaces. But as a division as a whole, we are growing year after year. We're bringing on new brokers, more seasoned people from other competitors that are coming over onto the land side, and they're really getting involved with that ground up development opportunity. So right now we're really growing across and spreading across the US.
Yeah. And tell me a little bit about and this is something good for anybody to know that might, you know, work with an agent such as yourself, sort of what is the agent's role within the equation? Because when you're working with buying and selling land, it's pretty obvious, right? Like, it's a real estate agent. You facilitate the sale, you protect the one that you're representing, make sure everything is good. You're representing the buyer. You make sure that there's no, you know, weird things with the land or weird permissions with the land or making sure that the value is there. And if you're working with the seller, you're doing the same thing, making sure the price is maximized, making sure that it's set up and ready to market to the public readily. What is the role of an agent when it comes down to working with a commercial transaction?
We're really a trusted advisor during this whole process. And typically in my market, that process could be 2 to 3 years. So we are holding hands for a very long time. And your broker in your market really needs to understand your market. So for us, I'm just going to try to talk about Raleigh-Durham for a little while. We do have current land use and future land use, and there's zoning laws that are applicable for our area, unlike parts of Texas and other parts of the country. But you know, you need to make sure that you've got a broker who understands the marketplace, understands the constraints and opportunities for your particular property, what you can and cannot do with it when it comes to rezoning that farm that's been in your family for a while for commercial use. So, you know, right now I'm working on a site in northern Wake County, and it is a economic development site that the local municipality wants to see this combination of multifamily and retail and commercial, and there's a lot of complexity built into that product mix. And so you've got to get down into the weeds with the planning department to find out what the city will allow to go on that piece of property. Right now it's a 40 acre farm. And we're talking with developers that, and we have to go out and solicit developers who actually do mixed use development. It doesn't fit everybody profile. It's not going to be everybody or every buyer within that marketplace. So, you know, you need that partner, that broker who understands the complexities of commercial real estate transactions, what those purchase and sale agreements look like. That's the contract that's going to come to you to make sure there's not a lot of pitfalls, a lot of outs from the buyer's perspective. But you also need to set a lot of expectations up front, because what we're doing is we are managing a project, a very long and extensive project process. So you want to have somebody on your team as a landowner that's got the experience and know how to navigate all of those different things. And when those hurdles come up, and they will come up in a commercial deal, just knowing how to evaluate and then how to pivot and, you know, stay the course towards that, hopefully try to get to a close.
And as far as, you know, we've talked about this before, but I want to kind of like refresh, because this gives perspective to anybody that owns land, is, you know, you own land, it's on the outskirts of sort of a density bubble, right? Like you've got a population that is growing, of an urban center that is growing towards that area. And here in Idaho, we have a lot of those places where you have farmland on the border of things that are turning into neighborhoods and stuff like that. And you know, there's some landowners, and I'll throw out these scenarios to you and correct me if I'm wrong, but like you've got some landowners that see things happening and just think it's a good time to sell. You've got some who have been marketed to by possibly a developer, possibly a real estate agent. Some cases, you've got real estate agents reaching out, and this gives us all a bad name, but you've got agents reaching out, getting that person to sell, has a developer on the line, gets the person to sell, then goes through the rezoning process to where they have sold at a lower value than what the landowner could get. But if the landowner had somebody representing them that knew the situation, they could get their land rezoned before sale and maximize the value out of it. You know, there's a lot of scenarios, or they've been marketed to with the whole, like, we'll buy your land kind of junk that, you know, mm-hmm. I don't think anybody wants to take advantage of. But those seem to be the kind of common scenarios. Are there any others that where people find and work with somebody like yourself?
Yeah, you know, the scenarios can vary. I mean, there's a thousand different ways to really bake into a commercial deal. But if you really want to bring the value, it's first sitting down with that local market expert who can tell you, all right, here's your entitlement pathway that you're going to have to go down. You know, if you don't want to spend any money by bringing any engineers in day one, then possibly let's go out and find a development partner, builder, who then we can contract with. And as long as we're providing them the time necessary, they can do all of the diligence from, you know, on their dime. Because what people need to understand is that to get that property rezoned, you can apply and you can go through the municipal steps to do that. But you also need to make sure up front that your property is suitable for development first. So you don't want to spend the money and have it rezoned, and then now you're a whole new tax bracket. You want to make sure that your delineation's done, your soils testing done, that there's water and sewer capacity there. A lot of this stuff is what's done typically in the inspection period. So either you want to take that money up front as a landowner and do it, great. We can add a whole lot of value by doing all those, having those seller documents available when that buyer comes in, or then we go out and, you know, phase two, let's go find somebody to do that on their behalf. And let's say that your property isn't suitable for development purposes. Well, we've used somebody else's time and money to find that out. And typically we can capture those reports to know, okay, let's analyze this and find out now what we can do with this land. And so, you know, there's a lot of different ways to look at this.
Yeah. And thank you for humoring me there too. I wanted to make sure to do a, I guess I call it our disclaimer, you know, and, you know, make sure that we can get people up to speed that have not heard the previous episodes. And if you were listening to this and you did not catch these previous episodes on rezoning or things like that have to do with commercial development, go back and check those out. Those are really great pieces of information. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, we're going to talk about markets in the marketplace and what we see in market velocity. Tell me a little bit about what you saw, because, you know, you head the team that we have here at National Land. That team is nationwide. And so you do get a good, well-rounded perspective as to what's going on around the country. What did we see for 2023? Sort of a recap.
Yeah, 23 was still a really good year for us as a company. What's interesting is that we saw this migration of both people and money happen during and after COVID. And so as companies started to reassess where they wanted to be, where the workforce was going, remote working became kind of this new way of life, if you would. People started leaving these really urban centers and coming down to the Sun Belt. And we've seen that through the transactions that we've done over 23. So North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, and Texas were some of our really hotbeds for commercial development. And so our three top tier sectors were single family housing, multifamily, and light industrial. And what you've noticed is that, I mean, the housing boom here in the Southeast is just going nuts. But because if you're from the Northeast or you're out towards the Midwest, your property values are lower here, your tax bases are lower here, and now you've got a lot of the tech and health sector that has planted their headquarters here in the Southeast. So you've got a lot of that workforce following those jobs locally as well. But that's been our core book of business for 23, and those states were a huge driver for our gross revenue this year.
So when people think of and discuss commercial development, I think the thought process goes very quickly to areas like retail or office space. I think you spoke to that in as an umbrella, talking about sort of what has happened. But tell me specifically kind of what you saw in markets for those throughout 2023.
Yeah. So let's just, you know, let's be very open about what commercial truly means, right? It's for development purposes. So, you know, when we consider commercial here with our firm, it's anything that's ground up development that falls under commercial. So residential, multifamily, medical, office, retail, you know, it's all kind of lumped in there. So don't think of just brick and mortar. But if we talk about brick and mortar real estate, just real quick, I will say that there was that sector of the commercial market took a really hard hit last year. You know, right now, I think we saw that like the traditional brick and mortar commercial was down more than 50% in 2023, according to CoStar. And if you just drive around, you'll see how many empty offices are in your downtown areas. That's because remote working is prevalent. And so there's a lot of open lease space right now, especially in your high-rise buildings. And even if you drive around your suburban areas, there's still a lot of empty lease spots in your commercial convenience areas. So we're noticing that there's this huge trend of pullback from people walking in, buying their retail because they're having it delivered via their doorstep, and everything's going more e-commerce. And so that was a huge impact, and it's going to have a continued impact on the commercial real estate market in general, because there's a lot of debt hanging out there back in these office buildings that, you know, companies have invested, and the workforce just isn't coming back to the office. And so people are moving further and further out from the city core because their children at home sometimes during the day, maybe they're hybrid as well, but mom and dad possibly is working hybrid from home. And so what we've seen is that the workforce is pulled back into the suburbs, and they're looking for a bigger house, a little bit more space, possibly a Zoom room to be able to do what you and I are doing right now, video conference wise, and that, you know, their kids have a place to play in the backyard. And now the millennials and the generations younger than that, they do like those urban areas. And you see that they're kind of going into your condos and your townhouses because they don't typically like to have yard work. They like to have a life where they can work, play, go down, hit a social, you know, bar at nighttime, and then not be tied down to much during the weekends, like yard work or house maintenance. So, you know, there's this interesting blend that's happening. But what we're also seeing, especially here in the Southeast, is there is a new, we've seen this in the Northwest, or excuse me, the Northeast, and out in the Pacific Coast, where there's a blend of mixed use, right? So you've got, it's a walkable community. You want to live, work, and play within that same community. Typically here in the Southeast, that's not been a traditional model, but now we're starting to see that influx now, late 2023, push 2024 and 25. A lot of the comprehensive land plans are being redone to include all of these different little sectors of commercial real estate now. So we're having to be creative to find developers who can do that, or they JV with other developers and bring those components in play.
So what you're talking about there is when there's a large scale development where, you know, we see it out here, like in Idaho, we get these sprawl areas where it's just like, oh, there's a billion houses and it's just wall to wall houses, mm-hmm. where there's a need for communities. So, you know, like, we don't just want the houses. We want a commerce center. You need to fill up with gas. You need to get groceries. You need a couple pubs and some restaurants, some small things there to entertain and feed, and sort of building community centers around it rather than just what we saw, I think, pre-COVID, you know, in a lot of areas. Well, I wouldn't even label this with COVID. It's probably just intelligent planning with, like, you know, with urban planning and stuff, how they're building that. And when you're saying mixed use, it's all incorporated in the same umbrella. It's a land sale, but it's planned according to sort of a community.
Yeah, it is. And you know, your water and utility capacities for water and sewer are becoming very strained, especially in my area. Everywhere that we turn, you know, there's got to be a sewer upgrade here, or, you know, you got to have a new pump station added there. And what the cities are saying is like, okay, we need to maximize our infrastructure, both fire, police, schools, and utilities and public services. And so they're really starting to rethink things now, especially 24 and beyond, on let's just not approve everything that comes our way. Let's be a little bit more strategic in that approach. So we're going to start seeing that as a company. And but what's also interesting is that we're starting to see developers right now take a whole different approach with their five-year plan, and they're pushing out further into these secondary markets that they traditionally did not develop in. And what they're seeing still is people are saying, okay, well, I don't want to be on a 20,000 square foot lot anymore. Let's go out and get 3/4 acre to an acre lot. I'm more than willing to be out in a sleepy town than I am in a bustling suburb somewhere. So I believe that the buyers are changing. The temperature for that is changing. And because we're all so connected now via internet, these rural areas are now coming online.
I feel like there's some kind of demographic study sitting here, you know, waiting to, like, the older you get, the less you want a people.
I think you're probably spot on with that.
Because when we're talking about millennials and the generations below that, we're really just talking about younger people. Younger people are like gathering more. Yeah, maybe it's I wonder if the trend will hold into the generation, or if we start to see something like, you know, the older you get, the less you want to be around other people.
You know, but this is nothing new. Like,
yeah, exactly. You know,
years ago, when industry kind of faded in rural America, everybody had to go to the cities to go find jobs. That migration is just really kind of reoccurring back now after COVID and more teleworking or remote working. So it's nothing new. It's just that we're a resurgence of an old trend, if you would. But, you know, the industries have been impacted differently. So everybody went nuts during COVID when everybody came home, capital was cheap, interest rates were low, federal government was printing money, and both all the sectors just went nuts. Industrial went nuts, multifamily went crazy. They, quite frankly, overbuilt. You know, they were really aggressive on their land plays, really aggressive on their markets. They went out there and everybody built product. And what we're seeing is now there is a oversupply of inventory in certain marketplaces right now. And the industrial side, you know, we saw a huge demand here in the Southeast for that. But right now we're about a 13-year low for that industrial space, because you got plenty of it out there for rent and lease, and they're trying to get very creative to bring in industry to lease those spaces up. Multifamily, very similar. You had a ton of projects that hit the ground. They oversupplied the market, you know, just a little bit. And now we're actually starting to see rents come down. So average rents here in Raleigh-Durham is averaging around $1,500 a month for a two-bedroom. But we saw that we've already come down 3% from last month. So we'll start to see these rents kind of come down a little bit. And a lot of these multifamilies pull back, the developers pull back in certain areas, but they're still aggressive in others. But home building is just one of those sectors that they don't seem to be pulling back. You know, as a company, we're still seeing home building there, that urge to go find new land and new markets are still there. And that's really where we're shining right now, because, you know, not only do we have our general side of the brokerage, who are those rural rec guys, they may be sitting on a fam or a farm with a family, and that water and sewer infrastructure is now starting to reach them, and they're going, well, you know, soybeans are just not producing what they used to. What's the highest and best use now? Possibly residential development. And now we've got developers who want to be in those marketplaces. So, you know, this past year, we've noticed that some of the top players for our company have been Lennar, DR, and Pulte. And that's not a surprise, because they've got the most capital. They've, you know, they're all over the country. They've got massive teams, but we're also seeing very well leveraged and capitalized smaller groups come in and buy property at a quicker close than some of the bigger ones will, because they don't have the corporate bureaucracy inside to kind of slow down the deals. But, you know, some of our top performers have been, you know, North Carolina and South Carolina. They have traditionally outperformed every other state when it comes to home building.
So I'm hearing you right and parroting this back to you is, Because the talk last year, that if you watch the headlines, commercial real estate is collapsing. It is a doom scenario. The entire market's going under. We're looking at a disaster of epic proportions. And if we talk about what commercial real estate is, which is what you just said, it's development from the ground up. Certain parts of it are slowing down. The office space area, the retail sector is, you know, halted and retracting. There was an overbuild in that area, and times changed. So the market has changed, but commercial real estate is still bumping along fairly strong because it encompasses anything that you're developing from the ground up.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, last year was a really, really good year for us. You know, we did about 3,600 acres worth of commercial development across the US, right around $72 million in gross. And then, but this year in 24, we're looking at 170% increase right now. So, but our deals are also longer. So a lot of these deals now coming, you know, that are going to close in 24 were contracted 3 years ago as well. But we're not seeing that slowdown on the contracting part. So, you know, the interesting thing about the traditional brick and mortar commercial real estate, yes, we're definitely seeing a massive hit there. We're also seeing a lot of those brokers who have been leasing agents, now they're starting to come over to the sales side, trying to get into the land side, because they're also seeing that influx of where the business is going. And so as of right now, we're very well positioned for 24.
Yeah, so let's jump in. Let's throw our crystal ball on and tell me a little bit about how the trends of 2023 shaped up at the end of the year, and sort of what we can anticipate for 2024. And again, the best part about this is we could be wrong,
We could be.
but
But
let's, you
the
know.
economic news is always wrong, it seems. I can tell you that everybody talks about uncertainty. You know, the biggest thing that looms over us is our national debt. National debt is just out of control, and that scares a lot of people. But on the interim, you know, right now inflation's running at 3.09 today. All of our business is definitely driven by interest rates. But what we've seen is that when interest rates started to go up, builders pulled back, and all they did was recapitalize a little bit. They looked at their deal flow, how many lots they currently have on the ground, what's their absorption rate, and they've retooled their business model some, and now they're back active again. So the throttle's been pushed back forward, and I think that's going to continue through 24, because especially on housing, there's still a shortage, right? Supply and demand, economics 101, that still drives most. But capital is still out there. There is still a lot of capital that is active in the real estate markets. You know, land in particular, the one of the oldest assets in the world, you're not making more of it. And so people don't mind putting their money into dirt, and because it does perform well, and it's a great way to hedge against inflation, and so we do see the capital markets continue to be active here. You talked about it before. 1031s is a huge part of this business as well, and so what happens is that some of these commercial developers will go out, do a big project, make a big payday, and then they'll 1031 that money over into new land positions for many years in the future. So we have that side of the core business as well, that's always prospecting and just waiting for development to get in these new secondary markets so they can have a position early on. And so, you know, we've got multiple sides of the business that's helping us drive these numbers.
Yeah, and so do we, you mentioned housing specifically, and that's been a really unique case in real estate. I mean, when everyone kind of went back to work, you know, when COVID restrictions were lifted, and you know, we realized that it wasn't the zombie apocalypse, and you know, we were able to calm down and rationalize everything, the one thing is that slowed down is the housing boom, and then interest rates smacked it around a lot, because by the end of what I have a really weird time calling it the COVID time period, but it really is. It was 2 years of craziness. And you get to the end of that, and what we have is where the demand drove price up, and there's a lot of inventory, and everyone's fighting for places to move into. And then interest rate comes in and everyone backs off and people stop selling. Well, now you have a shortage, but you still have people that want a home. And so that demand and low inventory actually shielded the industry from a collapse, because there was still a demand there. And you had this, you know, houses didn't drop all that. They have dropped. And in some places, they've leveled. In some places, they've declined. In some places, they still went up, but you didn't have a collapse. That demand in terms of development, it's not like you're going to buy a land and build one house. You're buying a big chunk of land to build a neighborhood. that demand's not slowing down in 2024, right?
No, it's not slowing down. I mean, we're as busy as we've ever been. And you got to think about it from this perspective. All these development groups, they have to think years in advance, you know, because it takes 2, 3, 4 years to go through the entitlement process, to get their funding in place and to start moving dirt. And so, you know, they're always thinking ahead. And the other side, though, that is impacting us and it's impacting every sector is the workforce, the labor markets are still inflated. Materials have come down and cost some. So, I mean, they can somewhat get a handle on that, but they still have a supply issue, right? I mean, we still have a backlog of supply chain problems from COVID. So some of the things from COVID that are now transitioning over downstream are still impacting development in itself, but I really think it's more of your labor cost and finding qualified labor to be able to do to practice in the construction fields and to be able to get crews on site within a given time. I hear that day in and day out that more and more developers and builders who are vertically integrated, they're just having a problem finding those services now to fill the shoes.
I was just going to say something you just said made me queue up. I may have had a mental glitch. I can't remember if I said interest rate or inflation when I was talking about the market slowing down. So if I did say inflation, I meant interest rate. You can't hold it against me. I just said it. Interest rate slowed the market down. But what you're just talking about too is one of the reactions that we saw from inflation is stuff costs more. So people want to get paid more. Yeah, and you did also have, like, during COVID, I do think that you had this sort of a renaissance in thought process where people realize they don't want to get paid peanuts and not have time off and not see their families. Instead, like, there were a lot of employers out there that sort of took advantage of low wage and stuff like that and people that need work. And I think there was a big pushback in a lot of areas. And now they're like, yeah, I'll work, but you're going to give me enough money I can buy groceries.
And so that's a challenge. Yeah, on that same topic, like, I'm going to come back to my area right now. The average home price for us is $490,000 in Wake County. All right, so let's say $490,000 at 6%. You've got to have a fairly decent household income, a pretty high household income to support that, plus your kids going to daycare and the food cost right now of going out. And what we don't see is the salaries catching up with the cost of living, right? And so, you know, you talk about 24, 25, what does that look like? I think that is your dynamic right there. Is cost of living outpacing salaries? And I'd probably say that the answer is probably going to be yes. I think that, you know, you look at all of our savings right now and what the market is doing. Is the market gaining enough on your dollar? Is the dollar value diminishing? Yes, right. That's inflation. And so, again, we're at 3 or so percent today. Is the Fed's policies cooling it all? I don't know. There's two sides of this coin. But as we sit today, I can tell you that, you know, our brokers are working as hard as they can trying to fill the needs of these developers because they're still building. But I just can't promise you it won't hit us in the face by the end of the year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and let's talk about from the land perspective. What are the landowners that are out there that, you know, are curious about their land's possibilities? Who are the landowners that are positioned the best for possible commercial development?
It's the ones that's really on the outskirts of the built out suburbs. You know, they are that next frontier coming in. And so many people say, when is the right time to sell? You know, there really is no great answer to that, because you could say, I'm going to hold out until next year where I can get $100,000, $200,000 an acre for my property. And if I just hold out, I'm the last one. Well, we could also have another great recession, and that model's not going to work for you. So you got to operate on today's scale. Now, there's also a lot of opportunities for these infield areas too. So people that have had larger lots, older subdivisions, that are now being built up around, collectively, those donut holes are very, very valuable right now because the city wants to bring those in into their tax bases, and they want to try to incorporate that into the surrounding areas as well. And so we actually put a development together with David Weekly Homes where we took six landowners, all who had 10-acre tracts, and they were all being built around. And then we bought them all out and combined them in one. And you know, everybody got paid a really, really nice payday. So landowners who are sitting in those positions, I think, are well positioned. But yeah, if you're in that that town that you're starting to see, you know, a lot of excavators show up, a lot of dump trucks show up. These are key indicators that development and dirt moving is coming to town. You know, it's not a bad idea for those landowners to walk into the planning department and go, hey, what's the vision for our town? And is my land in the path of progress? Because I think that baseline of understanding will really help them get a good viewpoint of what the town wants to see, how they want to see and manage their growth. But being plugged in to their local municipality is a really good idea because our brokers are, and that's where we get a lot of our information as far as projected growth, what the towns will or will not allow as far as development is concerned. It's your land, but doesn't mean you can do exactly what you want to with it. They're definitely going to judge that. So just being aware of those matrix.
And when you spoke to donut holes, you're talking about land that was, you know, developed or planned for maybe 30, 40 years ago. And now there's a new sort of urban center building around it. Is this when you're talking about areas like this, is it areas that have not yet been annexed or just areas that were sort of planned with larger lots annexed, but not utilized to the highest and best use?
Yeah, typically what it is, it's a farm that had been operating, let's say, as an equestrian horse farm for a while. And, you know, everything else has been built up around them, but they remained unincorporated. They remained in the county and they remained as an agricultural status. Well, by the time you look around and you're built up and there's houses and commercial all around you and you're the only 50 acre farm in that area, you know, you're really well positioned at that point in time. To now everybody is still looking for an area to build and you've got all the infrastructure around you to make it happen. Those are very, very valuable pieces of land. That's a really good time to sell if you and your family are ready to do so.
So there's definitely opportunity out there for this rezoning, conversion and development. And it's in kind of going back to the narrative of last year. If that's been a worry of yours that retail is not doing well, that office space is not doing well, that doesn't mean that you can't develop your land. It just means that it's going to be different. It could be a residential buildup. How, if someone's curious about this, you mentioned going into the planning department, but what are, you know, let's throw it on the sales pitch here. How would somebody get a hold of and or vet somebody to represent them in something like this, meaning somebody like yourself?
Before they go making any decisions on the brokerage that they choose, they need to have some questions in line. You know, what is your experience in the development market? How many transactions have you closed that required, you know, the entitlement process, rezoning, annexation, site plan? You know, who is your book of business? Who's your core book of business, right? Like, where does your buyers come from for this property? And how do you get them interested in my property? And so if you sit down and you ask those qualifying questions, don't start it out by saying, how much is my land worth? That's not the right question. The question is, are you qualified to be able to price my land? And, you know, those four leading questions will then transition over, okay, what is the highest and best use for my property? And now how do we price it, right? Because you may think that your property is suited for residential development, but the town's, you know, future land use says something completely different. And so you want that broker to be your advocate, to come in, do their homework, do all the reconnaissance for you and come back with the plan saying, okay, this is our path forward. This is how we can, you know, transition over from rural residential to a commercial use. And these are the type of buyers we need to now go after. And the great thing is, and again, your sales pitch is, we are a national company. I mean, we've got relationships with every major commercial development group, regardless of the sector type, all throughout the United States. Our CRM is massive. And so, you know, as you and I were discussing this morning, is we did a email blast of a 40-acre mixed-use site in Wendell, North Carolina, and it went out at 10 p.m. to our book of business. And by the following morning, it was offer, 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 offer. And that's because that we put the right information in front of the right people. And they're not always going to be in your marketplace. You know, commercial developers transcends over state lines. And they may be in Florida, Texas, California, New York. But as long as, you know, they see that this is the type of product and the type of market that they're planning for, we need to make sure that we're feeding their pipeline full of opportunities.
Yeah, I was going to say in the commercial sector too, like granted, you know, they're probably just scouring, you know, Zillow like everybody else, but they also have commercial real estate specific, you know, listing sites. There's your Craigslist and stuff like that that is out there. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that they're going to see it. Getting out there, having somebody with the relationships, that's in that sector, it really matters that you have those relationships, that you can contact them.
Well, and this is where I see a lot of landowners make a mistake. Is that you come in and you're a little behind the eight ball of talking to them as a consultant or a broker, and they go, well, I've already got two offers sitting here for my property and they look really good. Well, that's great. But what if you're only a few people know about your property right now? But what if we casted that net much larger? Do you think that those two offers could look better? Most likely they could. And, you know, one thing about development that I do tell landowners all the time is that it really depends how a company is positioned. So if they've got a lot of lots or products on the ground, they're going to be a little bit less aggressive with their offer because they're already fat with supply. But if you've got a new developer looking to enter a new marketplace and they need to put product on the ground to meet their capital requirements for their investors, they're going to be really aggressive. And so you don't know what those offers look like until you've really canvassed the entire nation to find out who's going to really pay the most for that property.
Awesome. So there's a lot of opportunity out there.
A lot of opportunity.
There's a good means to do so. And we've given a good pathway to landowners to be able to know sort of like how to make a good decision along the way. Because I mean, that's one of the big things, right? It's like no one's going to like, well, unless somebody's, you know, getting old and they want to retire the farm or whatever, like you're not going to impulse sell the farm or something like that. It's a long process and it requires a lot of decision making. Having the right information is kind of what matters.
That is. It is. It is a project based transaction that we've got to manage over time, manage expectations, and manage the hurdles that come along the way, because they're going to come. But, you know, for the ones who are always sitting on the sidelines saying, you know, I don't know what the economic forces look like, nobody's got that crystal ball. All you can do is what today looks like and make those decisions on what today will generate for you.
Like our old CEO says all the time, the best time to sell land is when you don't have to.
Yeah, this is true.
And there's truth to that. Well, awesome. Well, Corey, I appreciate your time here today. Super great information and a very optimistic outlook for 2024, which is, you know, it's funny because I work with our PR team all the time, and it's like, you know, they want to ask me about the doom and gloom of the commercial market. It's like, that's not what I'm hearing, but it's different interpretations as to what commercial
that's
is.
Right.
And that's where it gets interesting. But again, man, always appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thanks for everything you do, Matt.
Well, thank you. This concludes episode number 85 for the National Land Realty Podcast, discussing the commercial real estate sector for 2024 with Director of Commercial for National Land Realty, Corey Bowes. You can learn more about the buying and selling of land at nationalland.com. And for those of you still listening, You've noticed that this is episode number 85, and we are closing in steadily on episode 100 for the National Land Realty Podcast. I think we're going to do something special for that. My team has informed me that we want to try to do a live podcast for that one, and I think we're going to try to pull that off. So that gives you all the more reason to stay tuned for the next 15 episodes. Be sure to subscribe to the National Land Realty Podcast so you can keep up to date as this progresses. Thank you again, and we'll see you later.